Hi, everyone. This is JP, and you are listening to the Exploring EOS podcast. You can find us over at exploringeos.com, and please take a moment to subscribe and review the podcast. Let us know what you think. Let us know what kind of guests you want to hear from in the EOS community. I'd be grateful, and I'd be happy to try to get those guests on for you. Today, we have an interview with Steve Floyd, co-founder of EOS Tribe. Also on the show is Adam Elmostehi, and he is the co-founder, along with Steve, of a new distributed application called Qoqo. That's Qoqo. You can find them at qoqo.io, and EOS Tribe you can find at eostribe.io. This is a very interesting interview, so I hope you will enjoy. Steve, Adam, welcome to the Exploring EOS podcast. I really appreciate you guys being here today and talking about EOS Tribe. Steve, could you just start me off with telling us about how EOS Tribe came to be?
I'm a UX guy. I'm a designer of branding and advertising for many, many years. That's where I started my career before I ever was a web developer. Really front end engineer. I don't want to say full fledged, like full stack web developer, mostly front end. Didn't go to college for it, but just being in an agency, learning the whole marketing stack, learning the whole advertising stack, learning the whole messaging and branding and design and HCI and some of the code and how the internet works. That led me to like the front door of crypto. You know, as an investor in 2014, I was actually mining a small amount of with some grid seed orbs at my office in Deep Ellum, that in my closet up where my server room was. And, you know, it was because I couldn't acquire any, like I couldn't get it, you know what I mean? And I didn't accumulate much. Even at that time, I was a little behind the ASIC, like, you know, era. And I actually had sold a bunch in fear during a time that I had, you know, that I had actually needed to staff and make payroll. So lesson learned, I could have been much better off by hodling, as many say. But, you know, I had a little bit and that got me started to buy some Ethereum. I got Ethereum between about $18 to like $25 range, and then all the way up to about $100 average, and kept a good amount of that, liquidated some of that. I didn't make anywhere near as much as a lot of people who got in early when it was like a few dollars, but, you know, or even cheaper than that. But I made some, you know, enough to kind of get started and carry myself into where I am now. And that's led me into becoming a block producer on the EOS network. And, you know, it's a mix of, people ask, well, what it's about. It's kind of a mix of like game theory and, you know, politics and economics and, you know what I mean, computer science and, you know, all these different disciplines, you know, that I have. I don't claim to be an expert in any of them or even knowledgeable about, you know, even any one of them, but I know a little bit about throughout my life in 40 years about some of those things, and was able to kind of, okay, well, maybe I could do this. And just started out on that path about a year ago that at first led me to a few other coins trying to just get into the space, and eventually led me to EOS. And I was immediately, like within the first few months, just kind of ushered in and helped and loved by so many people. And just I felt like I found my tribe, you know, because in all my youth and in all my career, I put trying to make it and survive as the first KPI of my life. You know, and I got to a place where I actually got to experience with what a lot of younger people do who have good parents and may have not had a junky father or an alcoholic mother and come up really rough like I did, just thrown pillar to post. You know, nobody knows. I had a really rough youth, like really bad life coming up. I don't make any excuses for that. But you can turn that around, you know, and you can go to the highest levels of finance or academia, you know, if you want to take those steps. It might take you a little longer. Yeah. You know, but if you're committed and, you know, that's where the name kind of comes from. It's the core of, you know, that a lot of people ask why we use the torus, that sacred geometry shape, is, you know, we believe in that positive feedback loop that, you know, both elements, you know, are needed, you know, for a consistent, you know, state, you know what I mean? And that goes in your health and in our universe and just such a deep level in the macro and the micro. You know, we've always like believed in that. And it's a narrative that we're still shaping in a culture that we're still developing. I don't claim that it's, you know, but people feel it, you know, we were like the popular vote in the US, you know, and that when the US voted that first day, and that like meant a lot to us. It showed like this is working. And Adam coming on and people, you know, Rowley Felton and these guys who are brilliant, you know, guys like coming on and really believing in us and giving us their time and like saying, no, I get it. Like, I get the vision of what you're trying to do. That shit means a lot to an entrepreneur. You have no idea. Like when somebody really understands and can see you for the good and the bad and look past those things and see the vision, you know, because all entrepreneurs, to be honest, are flawed. You know, we do this because, you know, we don't have all the answers. You know what I mean? We have a vision or an idea and we chase it with our hearts and our passion. And you learn over time, it's a mix of both. You know, it's certainly good to have that, but passion alone, like Cuban says, won't get you there. It also takes like, you know, execution and, you know, a really solid pragmatic plan. And that's at this third kind of phase of my entrepreneurship, I'm trying to have a culture of mentorship. And that's a lot about why you see Adam. Why is this 21-year-old kid from like Rutgers University being brought in at this like, you know, operation? Like, why are y'all backing his DAP? Because, you know, honestly, the DAP where it is current day, is kind of different than what Adam came in. And I'm trying to show him like the right way to execute. And that's with patience and making sure the right legal framework is in place, especially with the regulatory climate. And just to not make the mistakes that I did. You know what I mean? Like to be really pragmatic and then learn from that. And then he can get further ahead. And then I create this advocate who, you know, once he's, you know, well off and moved on in his younger years and is able to experience more quality of life at a younger age, that's really what culture is. It's not what you say it is. It's how you treat others. And, you know, it sometimes he gets thrown off. He's like, why are you like treating me like an equal, you know, like you're way above me. And I'm like, because we are not into hierarchies as a culture, but that's not real mentorship. Anybody that pats you on the head and is like, okay, good job, Pippi. Now, good job, pig. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. Like, no.
That's well, it sounds like you had some mentors throughout your journey.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's great to hear.
Not many, but, yeah, well, but a few, you know, I wished I'd had more. And that's why I tell, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs have multiple, you know, mentors, you know, that help you in different areas, like non-overlapping areas. Don't have two exact mentors competing in the same space. Go find a finance guy that doesn't know any of this crap and just have that guy mentor you. Go have a different parts of your operations that you're trying to do. Go find mentors in your community or out there on the web that are completely standalone unto themselves.
So you were talking before about people seeing your vision, you know, when you had that, we're getting the popular vote there at the beginning of the, what is your vision for EOS Tribe? What is the EOS Tribe vision?
I mean, we have organized an incubator, and our two areas that we want to lead, you know, thought and to, you know, provide value to the ecosystem is through, basically, you know, really high level of security. And that's, you know, we try to do and not just talk about it. And in that, you know, Eugene Luzgan, our founder, was the guy who actually came up with the wire mesh network approach that became Ghostbusters. He was the partial architect of that entire process, not the person who implemented all of it. We give respect to Eric and Igor and some of these young guys who did a lot of the heavy lifting, but the architect of that, the guy who came up with some of these core ideas, was Eugene. So we say we're about security, but on a real tangible level, those same security processes are being used by the top block producers right now.
Okay. So and for people listening who are new, to EOS, can you just explain real quick what Ghostbusters is?
Ghostbusters was basically a security testnet environment for, you know, a lot of the top, you know, security oriented guys who are really security focused to just test out where the attack surfaces were. So security, when I say that we're security focused, like you really can't fuck with that. Like that's pretty hardcore. You know what I mean? Like Eugene is that dude. He's about that life. You know what I mean? So,
well, that's great to hear. I mean, that's one of the huge promises of blockchain is security, right? So
there's layers to security, like there's network level security for the actual nodes that are running. And there's a best practice to like not expose, you know, IPs and provide like public, you know, secured, you know, encrypted endpoints. And there's a whole layer of stuff, changing all your ports. I mean, Eugene posted a ton of stuff about it, but the Ghostbusters group, you know, created a process for it. And like I said, Eugene wasn't the only one, but he was one of the main people. in that process, you know, and that's, there was only five or six core guys. So then the other side of our kind of, you know, vision is, aside from offering real tangible security for the network and pen testing and everything that entails, the other side of that is adoption, helping drive adoption through good design. You know, and I'm a design strategist by trade. It's a big part of what I do. And, you know, and my entire career has been focused around, you know, design thinking and a lot of what has evolved into what people call design thinking I've been doing for 10, 15 years. You know, design is the entire thing. It's not just what you see. It's the error handling. It's the file structure. It's the documentation. It's, you know, how the actual, the developer experience itself. It's system-wide. Design is a system-wide thing, and people in HCI understand that. It's not just the form factor or the, you know what I mean, or the actual, you know, the actual, what you see, the front-end interface. Most people think of design, and they think, oh, it's just what I see. It's the website. Yeah, that's design. It's like, no. The architecture of the entire stack that's used could be considered, you know, there's design going on at all levels of that. So in all aspects of our world, I mean, you could say that our creator is the most, you know, I tend to side that there is a higher power to those atheists out there and nihilists. Like, you can have your opinion. I don't necessarily, you know, believe in any one, you know, denomination, but I definitely think there's a higher power out there, you know, from my experience in life. And, you know, I think that he's probably the ultimate designer. So basically those are the two pillars of, you know, what we're trying to bring to the ecosystem. But that's all, you know, if you've ever looked into any of our stuff, or is this all pretty new for you? It's okay if it is.
Well, I was actually surprised to see some of your things that I had looked into before. I didn't realize were actually projects of or associated with EOS Tribe. So for example, the satellite.
Oh, the satellite project's a legacy project. I mean, that's if we ever got voted in the 21 and we were doing $3 to $7 million a year, you know, for a year or two, absolutely we would put a percentage of that to look into a small, low orbit, static small sat. It's the only way a backup node could be done. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are, oh, you can't do that because of this. You can't do that. No, we've talked to Phil Mesnier and many people who've architected small, you know, the code on small sats and know a lot about that. And Eugene wanted to be an astronaut when he was young. He wanted to be in aerospace. And, you know, it was an idea. His idea, let me be clear about that. That was not my idea. And I agree with it. And I agree that it could be possible. But if Bitcoin and, you know, Blockstream are going to do it, why can't EOS do it? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Why can't these new chains do it? And that's a part of what it was too, is, hey, shoot for the moon, land on the mountain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I think it's a pretty cool project. Even if it doesn't happen for a while or anything, it's just like, yeah, that'd be cool if somebody did that and
put it out there, you know, lead that thought and see what's possible. And if we fall on our faces, you know, that's all part of the process. So,
and so just so people know a little more of what we're talking about, the satellite would be basically putting like a kind of a backup node into space, backup node for EOS. One more way to decentralize.
So as far as those, you know, design, you know, strategy and, you know, good design, you know, help and usability, helping drive blockchain adoption is something that I talk a lot about. It's going to be my talk at, you know, Big Design this year. It's several other conferences that I'm doing, you know, basically like presenting this talk. I spoke at Tulip about this. It was part of my keynote. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, what are we about? Like, what are our core values? And anyone can go and see on our site, there's really five, you know, core values that guide everything we do. You know, people are the purpose, purpose over duty, trust over control, transparency over position, and integrity over pride. And those kind of are, you know, as our lighthouse or our true north, that kind of guide like the things that we do. And if, you know, even individually us as leadership or even people coming on don't always own up to that, you know, and you know, we do our best to meet those standards and be the best versions of ourselves for the token holders that we serve on the network. And we're human, you know, we're not robots, we're not machines. So we may stumble and not be perfect. I often talk about divisive stuff and challenge Dan, and people get on to me about that and think I'm, you know, don't sit, you know, but we're not in a cult. We're in a new sovereign democracy. So we have to have the chutzpah, as, you know, Eugene would say, to step up and say what everyone's thinking. You know, even Dan himself, we need Braveheart. You know, sometimes we need Braveheart. We need to have someone come in and just challenge the status quo and move things forward, because that debate and discourse can be constructive. But then in his own, in the same note, when you do that to him, he doesn't always agree. So that's human. It's human. Sure. Dan's human too. He's fallible. He would be the first to admit it. We're all human. Nobody is better than anyone else. That is the number one.
Just real quick for new people potentially listening, Dan, the Dan you're talking about is Dan Larimer, who's
Dan Larimer himself,
the founder of creator of this technology behind EOS. So
he created BitShares and Steemit, and you know, this latest iteration, this platform approach to, you know, EOS of a more generalized version. Those were other very specific use cases and very specific versions that were architected to do one thing. EOS is like AWS for the blockchain, architected to do anything. And, you know, in that way, it's more of a platform like you would see Ethereum, where you could just build on top of it. And that's, you know, so that's what kind of brought me here. That's my little like life story and motivations, kind of core values, and, you know, and what our value add to the EOS ecosystem was about. But
sure.
Well, in that, our biggest new initiative is an incubator, mm-hmm. Within what we do. And that is a, you know, community led people that we bring in from the community. They're contributors. They're not like full fledged employees. They're able to help us scale. We supply part of our token distributions to help fund their dApp. And then they leverage our platform to actually promote. And it's a kind of a positive feedback loop, you know, young entrepreneurs like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, Adam would say I'm not super difficult to deal with. I think I'm pretty laid back.
No, not at all.
So
that's cool. Let's start talking about the incubator a little bit. This is, I like this concept. You know, you were talking about how you want to increase adoption. And I think an incubator is a great way to do that, because
absolutely
people aren't like Bitcoin. The adoption is really like, oh, we're going to just, you know, send currency back and forth. Okay. People are already doing that on EOS. That's taken care of, right? The real adoption on EOS is really going to be with distributed applications and people really being able to run and do very useful things on top of EOS. So, Adam, could you tell us a little bit about what exactly is the application that you're working on in the EOS Tribe incubator?
Yeah. So I'm working on, it's called COCO. So it's going to be a decentralized question and answer platform. And so what drove me to like thinking about this is the opportunity to share knowledge is as valuable as it is. The current systems and structures, the way they facilitate the sharing of knowledge and ideas is just, it's very flawed, because it's in the hands of one power, like one party. And like the perfect thing is like when me and Steve are like starting to like really work on this, in the beginning of May, answers.com had shut down. So what they did was just release a message to all the super users, which is like the very high ranking contributors to their site, and just say like, hey, we thank you for your time. Basically, we're closing down doors. That's it. You can no longer use our site. And to think about that, like, okay, like out from like an outside point of view, if you didn't really use answers.com, you can say, okay, like whatever, I'll go to Yahoo Answers. But think about that number one guy on answers.com who drove like for maybe millions of people to their website, and they were able to monetize his valuable time and knowledge. And just, and now like however much time he spent out of his life to do that, now all of a sudden it's just gone to him. And now he's going to have to start all over from scratch with whatever time he has left, or whatever efforts he even thinks are going to be worth it anymore, just, and to possibly have that same situation happen all again. So what I liked about just blockchain in general is the combination of, so I'm a neuroscience major with an economic minor. So it's good. It's like blockchain is really, it has a lot of human behavior, and it's solving new economic problems that like haven't been able to be facilitated before. Just, and it's all, like they say, like information is the new oil. So, and I think like the blockchain space, and what really drew me to EOS is on Ethereum, you have to pay for every little interaction you use with the blockchain. And just, I'm pretty sure Steve will agree here that for user experience, that's a hassle to, you have to always set your gas fees, and it's just not, it's not feasible to adoption. So what really drew me to EOS is you can put something like a Facebook on EOS. Like, you don't have to pay every time you like someone's post. You don't have to pay to comment. You don't have to pay to view. And it's like a lot of these things that really drew me to EOS.
Let me expand on that, because that was kind of like the alpha idea when there was like literally like six people in his group, eight people in his group initially. I was probably the fourth or third person that had joined, and the second person that actually responded to what do we do. There were other friends that were like, oh, this could be cool. Do something on the blockchain. We can make a token. But Adam, what I noticed about Adam is he wasn't as focused on the pump and dump of the token. Most of these guys I meet are very anxious to get an airdrop out. The token is the focus, mm-hmm. like the whole, not the mechanisms or the white paper or the UX. I mean, they just want to push something to the chain to show a use case, and like, they don't really care or vet it. They haven't peer reviewed it. They're just trying to airdrop something as fast as possible to get liquidity going. So then they can fund development. But haven't we seen a pattern of what happens in crypto? You go put out the ICO, you get the money. They don't build anything because they've got the money.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, we always took an approach of, hey, this is an opportunity to approach deal flow for us. If we actually, you know, if we actually create a few really solvent, like really well done, you know, dApps that are the, you know, shining example of like a real utility, they're well thought out, they're the product first, not token first, and then we actually have that vetted and peer reviewed by the top people, I mean, that's going to make us look really good. We don't have to do 10 shit coins. We could just do like one or two really badass coins, and they'll end up living for years, and turn them into a DAC, have a worker proposal system to set up a foundation to make sure the software is watched and the money is managed and not corrupt and standards. And then you set it free. And as an entrepreneur, that's a dream to be, because you get stuck in your business. So there's other economic models of why this is really advantageous to, like, you know, serious entrepreneurs. And what I noticed is that, you know, there's a dysfunction in DPoS systems because there's just really one flat user base and a reputation level that doesn't really mean anything. You see this in Steemit. It's really about how much stake you have, you know, in a DPoS system, where if you actually, you know, stake and reputation through community consensus, you know, validating that, then that is what comes together to create that like position of authority. You can't have two of those things, a lot of stake and self-imposed authority. That's more of an aristocracy. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to have all of those things, people who are voted in and elected, you know, not people voting themselves and elected. Like, that could be called in, you know, that could be called out. And you could even have a microcosm of, you know, of basically self-funded arbitrators in our own DAP, you know, that, mm-hmm. that were called something different, but maybe had the power to actually shut down, you know, bad actors, you know what I mean? Like, you know, because they had some system level access. We're still figuring that out. We're still figuring out how to offer some level of self-governance, but make it open-ended enough to where this community can figure it out for themselves. There's mm-hmm. always a balance, and we don't claim to have it figured out. We're still fleshing that out. We're still looking at things that are working with EOS. If we can augment that to EOS, or if we just keep that within our own ecosystem, maybe this concept needs a sidechain in and of itself, and it needs its own consensus to reach that. We are still studying and looking into that and finding the best way to solve the particular problem. But what Coco has evolved into is like not so much just a question and answers platform from an end user. That may be how it's perceived, but it's actually just like a human created topic engine. And if you look at most search engines, what they essentially are a list of machine curated topics with these little topic trees, tens of thousands of topics kind of all track back to these like core, like 64 root topics. So if you started this topic tree and you branched out in a validation model to expand on what topics would actually be approved, and in that you would have this self-governing topic tree. Well, what could we do with that? So if you took our topic engine that was curated by people and it was in their best answer to create that data, now you have training data, a public chain to provide training data for thousands of intelligent IPAs. Who knows what people could build on this? You know, if you had that that topic modeling in place. So you're not relying on the machines to do that for you. You're relying on people to do that for you, which is the way it should be.
I would say like the biggest benefit of the incubator is like there's so many like great minds in different areas that like there's like Steve said, if you say you know everything, then you probably know nothing, right? So you can't, one person can't do it. So it's like you really don't know what you don't know. Like when it comes to like search engine stuff and design and like I don't know that stuff and I couldn't like place myself in a way to even like talk about it. So like having many different minds on like one thing and you get all these different aspects and like you really shine it and polish it and like it's like you take one step back and then one step forward and like two back to just really look at the big picture each time and then it just kind of like it evolves from there.
QOQO.io is the website for that. Are you guys looking for more dApps to incubate, or are you kind of just...
We're really looking, like, it's not just about the idea, it's about the entrepreneur and where their head's at. And if you can find a really, you know, like, focused, easy to work with, malleable entrepreneur in their younger years, you can, you know, the idea can be shaped and developed, you know, and that it's really based on the person who's going to commit, because all of this is predicated on community. Without a solid community, these tokens really don't have any utility. So, you know, and like Dan says, you can't really fork a community as easily. I mean, I think that currently it's getting to that point in the ecosystem if they don't fix some of the problems going on, but that's a whole other discussion. But I mean, I think that, you know, we really look for people just as much as we look for the idea. The idea can be good, but if the person who's doing it is flawed, we don't want any part of it. If the idea is good and the entrepreneur's right, we might even help co-found it, get in and just do some of the work ourselves and push it forward to get out of seed stage and into real execution. So, you know, and I would say that that's when you've graduated. If we actually want to be advisors and jump on, like legit, jump on and found the project with you, you've definitely passed the test of that. You know, you've got the personality, we're able to work with you, you have those signs that let us know it may not happen now, maybe a year from now, you know, but we're on our way to something, you know, that certainly could be awesome. And the idea, we'll be honest, after we've got the white paper, the idea may change again based on what the academics tell us. We may have to adjust the inflation. We may have to adjust the token supply. Like that's why we've been waiting. Like we've got about another 5 days till a big announcement. And I'll give a hint. It's just going to be an upgrade on the site and some of our UI stuff and kind of our alpha white paper. It's going to be a light paper. It's not going to be the full white paper that we are putting in.
You're referring to Coco with this right now?
Coco, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
This stuff takes time. We don't want to rush out an airdrop. At first, we were trying to rush out the airdrop because the community was asking for it. Mm-hmm. But that's not what's best for the project. What's best for the project is for it to be executed correctly.
When once we started to like hold the brakes and Steve kind of like guided me away from some paths. And now I'm just like looking at other things that started around the same time. And I'm seeing them hit like major issues because they were just trying to push something out.
You're trying to get the token, dude. It's total play for money.
Well, hey, there's a lot of pressure to get out airdrops. And, you know, that's what a lot of people want. And I think at least from one perspective, you know, pumping the brakes on that and making sure the people in your community that you're building aren't just there for the tokens to mm-hmm. then go dump on an exchange, making sure that they really want to contribute and they want to be a part of building something that's a real solution and not Absolutely. Just part of like a ICO hype type cycle.
It's just an extension of that culture. I mean, that's all we're seeing is, oh, wait, I can just create a token and make a bunch of money and then, you know, it's like they... You can tell in the thought process that went into the idea that it's not really, you know, that the money is what it's about.
I want to get back to the incubator. If there are people out there listening and thinking, you know, I've got a great idea for a dApp. I want to get started, but, you know, I need some help. how do they get in touch with you? How do they get started down that road to see if they're a good fit for the EOS Tribe Incubator?
Anna Taylor. She's at EOS Anna and Telegram. You could, that's at EOS A-N-N-A, EOS Anna and Telegram. You can look her up and message her. If you've got a DAP idea, she collects that. She'll give you a form to fill out, a Google form that just is a questionnaire. It asks a bunch of questions about your project and, you know, what, where you're wanting to go with it. And there's going to be questions about you, about yourself and how you approach things and your attitude. And that's going to be, you know, just as important to us. And you complete that form and we follow up if it's interesting and it's that simple. But if we're not a fit, but it's a good idea, we may defer you or refer you to other incubators. So we're kind of trying to become a funnel for people in the space, you know, that are interested in doing airdrop, getting involved. Like, how would you do it? What's the legal framework? We basically plug you in with our network, people we've met through distributed markets and the, you know, the compliance people out of Chicago who are close to the SEC. We've built up a little network, you know, investors, people with, you know, have money and liquidity and angel for the right projects. It's maybe not every project is going to fit into those investors. We have a network of investors who we try to find the right angel for the right entrepreneur.
You can connect to us on, if you just go to eostribe.io, you can just pull up the whole site and then you'll see all the different social links to everything as well.
Adam, Steve, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate what you guys are doing for the EOS community. And thank you for exploring EOS with me today.
Absolutely, man.
It was a pleasure being here.
All right. That's the interview for today. Again, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on future EOS podcasts with app developers and block producers and other movers and shakers in the EOS ecosystem. The content of the Exploring EOS show, videos, and website are for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, legal, or professional advice of any kind. You should not take action on any information provided without first consulting a professional advisor and doing your own due diligence. Investing in cryptocurrencies is risky. Please seek professional help.